Judges chapter 13. I'd like to read, if I could, just a couple of introductory verses to a well-known character in the Old Testament. In verse 24 of chapter 13, the Bible says, "And the woman bare a son, and called his name Samson, and the child grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol." And in these two verses, you've read an introduction to one of perhaps the most fascinating characters in the Old Testament. Fascinating in that you saw a man who yielded such great strength, however, he was toppled by his great weakness. You know, everybody in this room has weakness. Did you know that? Unless your name is the Lord Jesus Christ, you have weakness. And a lot of times we don't want to acknowledge our weakness. And that's sometimes a dreadful thing. I haven't done it nearly as much this year as in years past, but sometimes I would go down to the commons and I would see people playing ping pong and I would think, you know what, I'd like to jump in. As an evangelist, listen, you've got to be well-versed in a couple of very important sports if during the summer months. One is ping pong and the other is foosball. Those two I love. It usually just takes me a couple of games to get back in the groove. But I used to play those a whole lot, and now when I go to camps, I still do that. Carpet ball, I'm just not as much into it, and kids beat me like a drum. That's just the way it goes. But, you know, sometimes when I'm playing ping pong with somebody, especially if I'm at a camp or something, they say, okay, I'm going to play the speaker, and I'll act like I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I'll hold the ball, and I'll just hit it with, you know, and they're like, no, you don't do that way, Brother Bill. When you serve it, you have to hit the ball on your side of the table, and then it hits my side of the table, and then I hit it to you. And so then I do that, and then they hit it back to me, and then I hit the ball on my side of the table again. They're like, no. No, after you do that, then you hit it over there. Oh, okay, you know. And sometimes with awkward movements, and, you know, they're like, oh, boy, this is going to be easy. And so then after that, you know, they'll look at me with some big smirk and say, oh, I'll tell you what, why don't you go first? I'm like, okay, all right. And I just sort of, and then all of a sudden it's like, pow. And they're like, okay, wait just a second. That's not right. That's not fair. And but then, after you divulge your secret, then, you know, guys will want to play you. It's sort of like they're sharks, you know, they're just like waiting to devour you. Like, I got the winner. I want to play him on, play him next. And so sometimes we'll just be warming up. And we'll warm up in ping pong, but there's an extreme weakness that I have in ping pong. It's called a backhand. If I have to reach this way with my right hand and hit the ball, I cannot hit it with near the force or accuracy as I could just killing it in an overhand smash. And so a lot of times when I'm warming up with guys, I'll play farther to the side of the table because I don't want to reveal that I hit like a wimp this way. And but, you know, eventually somebody hones in on that weakness and they keep hitting it to that side. And I'm like, I hate that. I know what they're doing. I know what they're doing. And then they're like, okay, I'm ready. And I'm like, I'm not. You know, this is not good. But just like I have a weakness in ping pong, listen to me, because we're made of flesh, listen, every individual in this room, every individual watching this chapel service this morning, listen to me, child of God, you have a weakness. And when you fail to deal with weaknesses as God brings them to your attention, it can cost you greatly in the years to come. In Judges 13, 14, 15, and 16, you know what we find? We find a young man named Solomon who had great strength. We have a weight room here at the college that some guys have never seen. And others, they're like, you know, I they can tell you all about the weight machines. But some people, they're really on a fitness kick. You know, I've got to do this many push-ups. I've got to do this many pull-ups. I've got to do this many bench presses at this weight, this many reps. And they're really into it. And they're really, really wanting to be strong and really wanting to be buff. Well, Samson, he didn't have to have a membership to the local gym necessarily for his fitness or necessarily for his strength. It was something that was supernaturally given to him. But nonetheless, here was a man who was very strong. The world would look and say, my soul, if a man can lift the gates of a city, boy, there's something to him. And while Samson in his great feats of strength would have the world's adulation and the world's fame, the truth is that Samson was so weak and he refused to deal with his weakness that it eventually led to a premature death. It eventually led him to pain and sorrow and hurt to the testimony of God. And so this morning, I want to beg you to not let history repeat itself in the student body of Ambassador Baptist College. I want to beg you this morning to hit your weaknesses head on, because if you don't, one day, listen to me, they will catch up to you. And if not careful, they'll destroy you. Now, I want to show you several things about Samson this morning. The first thing that I want to show you is Samson's devotion. It's found in chapter 13, verses 24 and 25. We really don't read much about Samson's strength. All that we see is that a woman bare a son and called his name Samson, and the child grew and the Lord blessed him. That's really the early days of Samson, as laid out in his biography here in the book of Judges. We know that he was born. We knew that he grew. And we also know that the Lord blessed him in his early days. Now, this isn't really a significant part of the message, but I do want to point out, you know, when you read about Samson, Samson actually did start out right. Samson grew up in a young home. These were God-fearing people. His birth was miraculous. And Samson did start out right. He was growing up and the Lord had blessed him. And I look across this auditorium and you know what? I see a lot of people. You know what? You've started out right. Now, there may be some of you today, you say, Brother Bill, I didn't have God-fearing parents. So I understand a little bit about that. And I'm not saying that you're a second-class person. I'm just saying that you had to come up through a different set of circumstances. However, there are a number of you that are either watching or listening today. Listen, you started out right. You were raised by God-fearing parents who invested and poured time into you. They loved you. They brought you up in the house of the Lord. The Bible wasn't foreign in your home. And during your younger years, the Lord blessed you. You remember maybe when you were about to get into the youth group, here you are, an aspiring sixth grader. You're about to go into the seventh grade. It's funny how seventh graders or sixth graders rising into seventh, they're really excited about getting into the youth group. And the older kids are like, oh no. Oh, great. They've forgotten that they were the sixth graders at one time about to enter the youth group. But you're like, boy, that was great. And I'm telling you, you're like, wow, this was super. I'm in the youth group and here we have this youth program and I'm going to win all these trophies and I'm going to win all these ribbons and I'm going to do this and that and we get to do this and I'm grown up now. And that's the way you started off. When you were a kid, you were a sweet thing. I mean, people would say, well, I'll tell you what, she's just something else. She's just the greatest girl, or he's the greatest fella. Here they are, elementary school kids, and they're just happy and cheerful and compliant. There may be a lot of you here that you started out that way, and you're to be commended for it, but here's the problem. Just because you start that way doesn't mean you finish that way. I'm going to tell you, history is filled with young people who started out well but finished horribly. You can't rest on the laurels of your past devotion. I was raised in a preacher's home, or I was raised in a Christian home, or I won this many plaques and trophies for King's Kids, or whatever it was that you had growing up. That's great. I'm glad you had those tools, but listen to me, that does not ensure that you finish well, and Samson's story is a prime example of it. Samson knew what it was like to grow up, and the Lord blessed him. And in verse 25, and the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. Listen, Samson knew what it was like to be used of God. The Spirit of God was moving. The Spirit of God was using him. And so what am I saying at the start of this message? I'm saying this. You can be here and be raised by God-fearing parents. You know what? You can do what you need to do, and you've grown up in that environment. And even you've experienced times in your life at a young age where you feel like God used you, and that is all good. Yet, just because you started that way doesn't mean you're going to finish that way. Number one, Samson's devotion. But number two, I'd like to dwell a little bit on Samson's decisions. These decisions reveal his weakness. Now remember, every person in this room has a weakness. Samson makes a series of decisions that not only reveal his weaknesses, but really in essence, they reveal his character. Our decisions reveal our character. When you decide not to get out of bed on Tuesday morning because you don't want to and you miss class, it reveals your character. You say, well, I was sick. All right, well then that reveals you were sick. I'll give you a pass. Don't come to school sick, right? You should not come to school sick at all. I don't feel well. Well, call Brother Metcalf or call Mrs. Lucan and don't come in. And for some of you, if you are missing all kinds of days because you're making up sickness, we'll deal with that, all right? Some of you have quizitis. It's a real bad disease. It usually is coordinated. It runs in seasons that are dictated by the syllabus. It's almost like the full moon every month. You can tell it's coming. Quizitis, he doesn't look well. Just wait, tomorrow we'll not see him. Put it off, is what the devil says. But I want you to notice Samson's decisions. I want you to see that these decisions he made revealed what he was. And listen to me, not only do your decisions reveal your character, but listen to me, your decisions will affect your future. You remember that. You know, when you were a kid, some of the toughest decisions you made were either Coke or Pepsi. Doritos or Fritos. Who wants to eat Fritos when you can eat Doritos when you're a kid? Lay's original potato chips. Might as well be cardboard when you have Doritos. You know, you're going to be faced with a big decision when you leave this place and you go to the kitchen. It may be hot dogs or a sandwich. It may be whatever the main, you know, you've got to make a decision. And if you're like, I'm not doing the hot bar, I'm doing a sandwich, well, you've still got decisions to make. Is it going to be the Ambassador Club or is it going to be the hanky? You know, there's a lot of decisions that you make every day. And a lot of those are casual decisions. I mean, you're not going to lose an opportunity to go to a mission field just because you ate corn instead of green beans, all right? That decision's not that great in consequence. But I want you to see something. The decisions that Samson makes here, listen, they are going to greatly affect his present and his future. And if I could say it this way, these several decisions that I'm going to bring up to you this morning, listen to me. These decisions basically can be rooted in this one observation. Samson made a decision to sacrifice the power of God for the pleasures of the flesh. That's where the rubber meets the road. And at these decisions that we see, Samson made a conscious decision to sacrifice the power and the blessing of God for the pleasures of the flesh. And let me highlight three decisions for you. The first one is Samson made a decision for a Philistine wife. Now, in reading about this, we're going to look at it here briefly. Some people may say, well, this is a little controversial to me. All right, well, let's read it. Judges 14, verse 1. And Samson went down to Timnath and saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and his mother and said, I have seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore get her for me to wife. Now I want to stop there for a moment. Hey, are you ladies glad that this does not happen in 2020? So what do you mean? You're sitting in the commons, you're minding your own business. And the most unattractive, awkward young man sees you. And you see him go to his parents and he's pointing at you. And you happen to hear him say, get her for me to wife. I'll guarantee you, if that kind of business went on today, there'd be no girls in the commons. You'd be like, it's not worth it. It's not worth the risk. I'll admit, the customs may have been a little bit different back then. But instead of just being so humored by the custom, I don't want you to miss the importance of what Samson was doing. Samson looked and he said, Mom and Dad, that's the woman that I want to marry. And notice in the next verse, verse 3. Then his father and his mother said unto him, is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren or among all the people that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson, it's like he didn't hear a word they said. Samson didn't say, well, Mom and Dad, can we talk about it? Samson didn't say, I don't know that I'm really understanding what you're saying. No, Samson says, get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. Now the next verse tells us that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines. I believe personally verse 4 is just saying God took a situation and he used it for his workings, but the idea was, Samson, you don't go marry. The Philistines were the enemy of God, and they were well-established enemies of God. But you know what? That did not matter to Samson one iota. All he could think about is, she pleaseth me well. Samson made a decision for a Philistine wife. Samson made a decision to become one with somebody who was a part of the enemy of God, enemies of God. And it would eventually lead to a great downfall. I want to say to you in 2020, I know we have no Philistines per se living here in the United States, but I think the same principle applies. Listen, when it comes to every young person in this room that's unmarried, it ought not ever even enter your mind to marry somebody who is not a child of God. That should be non-negotiable. But for Samson, Samson didn't live by principle. Samson lived by passion. And when you live by passion instead of principle, listen to me, you are going to wind up in a ditch. Now, some of you don't need to run out of here and say, well, Brother Beal, he said she looked nice. And, you know, does that mean God wants us to marry ugly people? You know, the devil deceives you and says, it's only the ugly people that are spiritual. If they look attractive to you, then it's not God's will. You know, no, that, listen, that's not the idea. The idea is when you're so overwhelmed by your passion and you shove principle in the closet, listen to me, you have made a poor decision. Now, you know what I encourage you to do right now? I encourage you to make up your mind right now. If you have not put your flag in the ground and say, when it comes to relationships, this is not even an option, and just go ahead and make up your mind. Because if you don't and you get into the heat of the moment, boy, I'll tell you, your thinking will be skewed. I find sometimes the best decisions we ever make in life sometimes are not necessarily monumental decisions that are made or at an altar, but they're made in a pew during a message when God pierces your heart and you say, "All right, Lord, I promise you that." And there's some of you, you've never reached that conclusion. You ought to reach it this morning. But not only did he make a decision for a Philistine wife, he also made a decision for honey. Look with me in verses 8 through 10. Actually, let's read verse 6 because this is where the story is really amazing. "And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he rent him." Now, when it says he rent him, he did not pay for him. He tore him. He rent him as he would have rent a kid. That's not a child. That's a baby animal. "And he had nothing in his hand, but he told not his father or his mother what he had done." This lion roars out against him in verse 5. The lion comes out and just in all of his fury, and Samson takes this beast that has killed many a man through the centuries and basically takes one paw and rips it off. Another paw and rips it off. And he rips this lion as if he is some small animal. Could you imagine watching that? I mean, you're watching this from a distance and you're like, could you imagine? You're just walking by and you're like, "Oh boy, that guy, he's dead as a hammer." And the next thing you know, the lion is dead. That's an amazing thing. The Bible tells us at the end of that he didn't tell his father or his mother what he had done. Verse 7, "And he went down and talked with the woman, and she pleased Samson well. And after a time he returned to take her and turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. And he took thereof in his hands and went on eating and came to his father and mother. And he gave them, and they did eat, but he told not them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion." So Samson's coming by. I'm sure I would have been the same way. I'd have been like, "You know what? I killed that animal out here. I want to take a look, see what he looks like." He looks in that carcass, and lo and behold, the bees have come there, and he gathers his honey. He's like, "Man, I like that." And he grabs up some honey, and he takes it to mom and dad. And he comes to mom and dad, and he says, "Hey, I've got some honey for you." And they enjoy it. But here's the problem. He didn't tell his mom and dad. Now, some of you are like, "Okay, this is like really weird. Every time I give my mom and dad something, should I tell them that I got this from Dunkin' Donuts for you?" Well, it has Dunkin' on the cup. Duh. You're like, "What's the big deal? Okay, so I bought my parents something. Do I have to tell them I got it at Walmart instead of Belk's?" You ladies know the difference. Guys don't. Guys don't know what Belk's is. They know what Walmart is, but not Belk's. No, here's the concept that you're missing. You see, Samson had taken a Nazarite vow, and part of that was that he could not touch an unclean thing. And when you touch a dead carcass, you've broken the rules. And that's why he didn't tell them. Now you tell me. You tell me, outside of a surprise birthday or anniversary party, you tell me the last time you withheld something for your parents and it was a good thing. I probably could say right now, you know, if you say, "I just don't know if something's right or wrong," I'll tell you a fence post that you ought to look at or a guidepost you ought to look at. If you keep it from mom and dad because you know what they're going to say, then you've probably answered your question. You're like, "I'll have you to know I'm a full-grown adult." Truth is, you're not a full-grown adult yet. You're 20. You wait. You'll be full-grown in another 20 years. Your clothing sizes change. Yeah, you'll be full grown then. You say, "Well, I'm a full grown adult." Listen, you know what? You're right. You have risen to the ranks of adulthood. You're learning what it is like to accumulate bills. You're learning what it's like to have to work harder than you ever have in your life. Congratulations. I'm glad you made it. But that doesn't mean that mom and dad are unimportant in your life. And it manifests itself in so many different ways. Well, I know mom and dad told me that I should not even have an interest in my first year of college, but if mom and dad knew this, they would kill me. Let's keep this under wraps. You know who you sound a lot like? I'll tell you who you sound a lot like. Samson. I'm trying to help you this morning. Your flesh pushes away and you say, man, I have received independence. No longer am I at home with mom and dad, but you still take their money. I don't care if you're 40 years old. If you've got godly parents and you withhold information from them because you know they're trying to live by principle and you just don't want to hear it, listen to me, you are making the same mistake as Samson. And if you live the rest of your way like that, one of these days you're going to be maimed like Samson. He made a decision for a Philistine wife. He made a decision for honey. And he also made a decision for immorality. Judges chapter 16 and verse 1. The Bible says, then went Samson to Gaza and saw there an harlot and went in unto her. By the time you hit chapter 16 and the latter part of his life, here's a man now that is indulging in immorality. Let me tell you, I believe there's a progression that's taking place. You know, I don't believe that most people become immoral just at the drop of a hat, but you know what? There are telling signs that happen as they make decision after decision after decision, and they gain comfort levels. They say, well, you know what? Life's not that bad. I made that decision. What mom and dad said didn't really, or, you know, tell me might happen, didn't happen. You keep going, and you keep going. But I'm telling you, there's eventually coming a day that that kind of mentality will lead you to make decisions that you never thought you would ever make. Just remember, your decisions reveal a lot about your heart right now, but they also reveal a lot about your future. That's why it's important for you to be straight up about your weaknesses now and hit them head on instead of pushing them off, because one day it will cost you greatly. You see Samson's devotion, you see Samson's decision. The last thing I want you to see is Samson's destruction. I'm not going to take the time to read all the narrative because I don't have the time to do it. But basically, Samson meets up with a woman named Delilah. And Delilah is trying to lure for him the secret of her strength. Remember, Delilah is in league with the Philistines. They join up with her and they say, you find the secret of his strength and we're going to reward you greatly. Now remember, Samson has chosen passion over principle. And now he is in an exposed position. He meets up with Delilah, and he thinks for a while the loving is really good. She's beautiful. This is great. I love the way she makes me feel. And finally, as he's getting a little sleepy, she says, you know what, Samson, tell me the secret of your strength. And in Judges 16, verses 6 and 7, he says, well, if you tie me up with 7 green withes, I lose my strength. And the old boy goes to sleep. And Delilah, in league with the Philistines, said, you hear that? And Samson, away, you know, one of the things I hate to hear sometimes is my alarm clock. I do. I hate to hear it sometimes, especially when I get home at 1 o'clock in the morning and it goes off early in the morning. You know, alarm clocks, now you can control them as to what you like to wake up to. But it used to be, before we had cell phones, they just made alarm clocks that sounded horrible. When I was in college, when the alarm clock went off, ah! That was it. And the only person who could not hear it was the owner of the clock. Now you can wake up to Beethoven, you know. Who wakes up to that? You know, I'm like, that's what I go to sleep to. But could you imagine an alarm clock that all of a sudden says, Samson, the Philistines are upon thee. Samson wakes up. Huh? Now we're reading this thousands of years later. She comes up to him again, says, Samson, what is the secret to your strength? And there's some of you guys in here, you're like, I'm going to tell you, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but buddy, I know what she's up to. I'm sitting here reading this, I'm like, Samson, please tell me no. And Samson looks at her and says, well, if you tie me up with seven, or you tie me up with new ropes. All right, Samson, go to sleep. You're tired. Psst, did you hear that? Samson wakes up, the alarm clock. Samson, the Philistines are upon thee. Oh. Huh? You know, by this point, we're just, listen, some of you are true freshmen in this room. You'll always be a freshman. But you know what? I think at this point, the true freshmen are like, boy, I know what you're up to. She comes to him a third time. Samson, what is the secret of your strength? Well, if you weavest my hair with the web. Now, if you don't know what that is, just watch the ladies in the classes or commons. Like tying knots in hair. You know, maybe you walk by and maybe that happens in the dorm, maybe not in public. She's like, you know, okay, well, all right, you go to bed, Samson. Samson goes to bed. They do that. Same thing happens. He wakes up. Listen to me. At this point in the game, we're looking at Samson and like, are you crazy? The fourth time, she manipulates him and said, how can you say you love me when you don't tell me the truth? She nagged him. Samson caved. He gave the secret of his strength. He lost his strength. Let me ask you a question. How in the world can a man like that be so blind to what's going on? There's one simple answer to it. Because he was drunk with his own lust. You know, I was raised in a home where probably coming home from school, I saw my dad intoxicated more than I saw him sober later in the day. And you know, whenever I saw my dad intoxicated, his reflexes were delayed. Sometimes his speech would be slurred. His understanding was dulled. There were times where as an 8-year-old, I had more sense than a 50-year-old. And what made all the difference wasn't our age or our mental capacity. It was that he was intoxicated and I was not. You know how Samson made this decision? Because he was intoxicated, not with liquor, but with his own lust. You know, I've seen some young people in Bible college that were drunk. You say, well, did you kick them out? That's what a discipline committee's for. You drink beer in this place, listen, you're done for. Well, it wasn't quite that simple. They had never touched their first drop of booze, but they were so intoxicated with their own lust, they pushed away their parents, They pushed away any authority, and when they left this place, they drove that relationship right into a ditch. I mean, their friends are like, hey, man, you know something's up. Hey, can't you see what's going on? Listen, it did not matter. I'm going to do what I want to do. Listen to me. If you get to that point where you dig in your heels and that's what you say, there is a wreck around the corner. It may not happen tomorrow. It may not happen next month. It may not happen next year. But I believe this, be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. You know, it'd break my heart. It'd break my heart to see somebody who gets off to a great start, but yet they are so drunken by their own emotion or their own lust or their own stubbornness and their own self-willness that they say, you know what, I am just going to do what I'm going to do. You say, what did it cost Samson? I'll tell you what it cost him. It maimed him physically. The Philistines, when he lost his strength, they plucked his eyes out and they made fun of him. And you know what happens? The world does the same exact thing to every Christian. This may shock you, but do you know who sometimes has the highest moral ideals out in the world today? It's the liberals. You say, what do you mean? I mean, I'll tell you what, the very moment a Christian falls, or the very moment they're the first ones to jump up and down and say, look, see, he did wrong. They refuse to condemn themselves, but they look to the children of God, and the very moment they see the flaw, they identify it, and they'll do everything to maim you and wound you. I mean, they pulled Samson's eyes out. They humiliated him. And you know what? If we don't humble ourselves in the sight of the Lord in a chapel service, guess what? We will experience some humiliation in the future. They maimed him. The enemy rejoiced. They blasphemed God. Listen to me. When we make horrible mistakes, and I'm telling you, we see it over and over and over again. When a preacher falls, when a preacher has an indiscretion, when a well-known Christian makes a mistake, the very first thing is the devil raises his choir and they sing, I told you so. And we hurt the testimony of God. But the bottom line is this, Samson went to a premature grave. His hair grows back out. He stands between two pillars. Some guys are like, boy, this is a way to end life. This was not the way God ever intended Samson to end his life. Samson basically commits suicide, more concerned about vengeance on the Philistines than even the fact that he had just had God blasphemed by the enemies of God. He killed more in his death than he killed in his life, perhaps. But it was nothing to brag about. Why? Because he went to a premature grave. You know what happens when you leave your weaknesses unchecked? It leads you to a point you never thought you'd get to. Hey, I want to encourage you. You let God build your character. And one of the ways that happens is when you identify the weaknesses. Because if you don't, it could be of the greatest detriment to you in the days to come. Back in 2007, read a story about a bridge that collapsed on I-35 up in Minnesota. It was a rather large bridge, and at 6:05 in the middle of the rush hour, that bridge collapsed. In rush hour, 8 people were killed and 145 people injured. It's a wonder more weren't killed. They went back and they did investigation, and you know what they found? They found that even as early as 1990, that bridge was inspected every year. As early as 1990, here's the observations that they had on their reports. Structural fatigue. Fatigue cracks. And they let it go for 27 years. And now you have 8 families without loved ones and 145 injured. You know why? Because a group of people weren't willing to deal with a weakness. And not they acknowledged it, but they did nothing about it. One last story, and I'm done. Just recently, I was corresponding with a friend of mine who was incarcerated. Just recently was released. He was incarcerated because he acted with passion instead of principle. And it cost him, in a way, it cost him great separation from his family. It ruined his possibility of future ministry. Now he found himself in prison. I wanted to write him. I wanted to give him a glimmer of hope. I wanted to tell him, you know, in the midst of all this, God can still do some things, but please don't turn your back on God. Please go forward. And to my knowledge, he is. But you know, in the letter that he wrote me, he told me, he said, I still remember when I was in Bible college that there were some problems that I had that I hid from everybody else. And because I refused to deal with them then, that's why I'm here today. That's not a fairy tale. That's a real life story. And you know what my goal and my aim is this morning? Is for history to not repeat itself. Listen to me, if you're a young man in this room and you've got a weakness and you've acknowledged it but you're unwilling to deal with it, listen to me, better to humble yourself now and suffer a little embarrassment than to hide it and one day suffer a lot. Young lady, I want to tell you this morning, better for you to say, you know what, I better come clean with mom and dad. And I better take my beating. Because I know what they're going to say. Better for you to yield yourself now than to live a lie and one day have your life in ashes running through your hands. So I want to ask you as we close this message today, what is your weakness? And not only are you willing to acknowledge it, but are you willing to do something about it? Let's bow our heads together in prayer.